Morning, everyone. What a privilege to be able to come up here after listening to that. Kind of takes me back a few years. Some of those little children in the front were just about the same age as I was when I first went to the Feast of Tabernacles. Look at what they have to look forward to. Hopefully we won't have another 64 years or so, right? But one never knows what time we have yet. I would not have thought 64 years ago that I was going to be standing here in Jekyll Island 64 years later and giving a sermon at all. God can do some very strange things in our lives. The title of my sermon today is Booth It or Lose It. Okay? It's kind of based on a famous three-word thing in Tennessee where I was up until this last summer. Click it or ticket. Okay? Well, in this case, it's we either booth it or we're going to lose it. And what I'm saying is, do we really understand why God commanded ancient Israel and why he commands all of us to live in booths for 8 days? Why does he want us to give up our nice homes and travels a considerable distance to be able to live in temporary dwellings? Is there a purpose behind it? Is there a reason why he wants that? Or was it just kind of a whim of God that he decided this would be a nice thing for people to do? Well, let me assure you, God has a reason for everything that he commands. There is a reason for everything that he says we ought to do. And sometimes I think it's easy, as we leave our homes and we go to various feast sites and we live in some pretty nice facilities, don't we? We don't have to live in little tents or little trailers, or some of the motels I've stayed in over the years. We stay in some pretty nice places. And it's easy to miss the point of what boothing is all about. What is Feast of Tabernacles about? Why do we do it? Some of us might even think that these temporary dwellings are probably better than our original ones we left to come here for, right? Some of us might like to make these our permanent dwellings rather than the temporary ones. But that wasn't the case in ancient Israel when they built little shanties, actually, little buildings they called sukkot for the plural, sukkah singular, sukkot is the plural. We are at this feast of Sukkot, and that's where we are staying, and there is a reason behind it. We need to clearly understand why God commands us to live in booths. Because God reveals much about himself. He reveals much about his plan. He reveals much about our destiny by telling us to live in booths. And when ancient Israel forgot to live in booths, and they forgot to obey God, they lost it. And the same thing will happen to us if we do not understand why we do it. Now, in those 64 years of keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, I've lived in all kinds of booths. Okay. First Feast of Tabernacles, I remember back in Belknap Springs up in Oregon, We lived in a little shack, a little cabin. There was a family of six or seven of us living in a one-room cabin. We took our sleeping bags, but we lived there for the 7 days of the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, we had a farm truck, and we went and took that farm truck, put a tarp over the top of it, went down to Belknap Springs and backed it up to a window in that little one-room building, and all of us kids slept in the farm truck, and my parents were in the luxurious cabin. Okay. And it was a unique experience. I'll never forget those days of the Feast of Tabernacles as children. In some ways, you kind of wish we could go back and relive some of that, because it had a very great meaning that's easy for us to miss today. We would actually pick a lot of fruit and vegetables from our farm, which was about 70 miles north of Belknap Springs, and we would pick squash, and we would pick grapes, and we would pick all kinds of fruits and vegetables and load our truck down, and then we would travel the 70 miles down to Belknap Springs, unload all that produce in the kitchen area, and eat it later as we all sat around tables together having our meals at part of the Feast of Tabernacles. Can't do that nowadays, but it was great. And as a small child, I'll never forget it. We had farmers that would bring smoked turkey down there. And we would have the kitchen, they would prepare those smoked turkeys, and we would have delicious meals. There were about 50 to 60 of us at the Feast of Tabernacles. That was all there were from around the world in the Church of God, as far as we knew. But it was interesting. We had one man that used to come from as far away as Norway. Even back then, he came all the way from Norway every year to keep the Feast of Tabernacles in Belknap Springs. But then we left Belknap Springs and we went to another small area in Northern California called the Siegler Springs, and we kept the feast there. It was a little nicer housing. They had nicer rooms. But it certainly wasn't as nice as when we moved to, originally to Big Sandy. It was not so nice. Okay. But later, Big Sandy got quite nice. But that wasn't as nice as the ones we had when we went to Squaw Valley, where you could live in some very lush and beautiful condominiums up in that area of Northern California, up in the Sierra Nevadas. But all of these different kinds of booths really don't make a difference. It's the fact that they were all temporary, right? They were all temporary abodes. They were not our permanent home. They were not our permanent dwelling. And that's the point we need to remember, is that we are here living in temporary dwellings for this 8-day feast period. When those days are up, we leave, pack up, and we go back home, right? They're temporary. So I want to talk today about what some of the meaning is behind those temporary dwellings. Can we glean a little bit of importance from what God says? Let's begin by going back and reading what it says in Leviticus chapter 23 about the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Sukkot, this Feast of Booths. One of the things I would like to point out right from the beginning is that it is a harvest festival. The Feast of Tabernacles is a harvest festival. Now, most of you are not farmers and have not reaped crops and produce and come to the Feast of Tabernacles seeing what you have been able to glean and reap from your crops and put in the silos or put in your various barns or whatever. But that doesn't change the fact, brethren, that this is a festival that is a harvest festival. And that we ought to be able to see, as I'll bring out a little later, that we have been able to reap a crop, spiritually speaking, haven't we? Or at least we should have been able to reap a crop this last year in our lives. What kind of a crop was it? Was it a 30-fold increase, a 60-fold increase, or was it a 100-fold increase? But it says here in Leviticus chapter 23, I'll bring out some various points on this, in beginning in verse 24 of chapter 23. And actually coming on down a little bit, in 39, that's where I want to pick it up. And also in the 15th day of the 7th of month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land. So the very first point that he makes clear to us in this verse is that we come to this festival of booths following a time of harvest, right? A time of harvesting. And so when we come here, it is after you have taken in the fruits of the field. When you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast unto the Lord 7 days. And on the first day shall be a Sabbath, and on the eighth day shall be a Sabbath. So the first point I want to make is that after the fruit of the land has been gathered, we are here celebrating a spiritual harvest that we have been able to enjoy because of God's blessings. As we heard earlier in the feast, that former and latter rain, the rain in due season, that we have been able to, or God has enabled us to produce certain crops spiritually. We didn't come here just to have a good time. It was a time that we need to reflect upon, what have we harvested? Because the next thing he says, coming on in verse 40, and you shall take you on the first day boughs of goodly trees, and branches of palm trees, and the boughs of thick trees, and willows of the brook. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. So they had certain things they were to do. I'll briefly mention again a little later, what do boughs of goodly trees and branches of palm trees and boughs of thick trees and willows of the brook, what does that have to do with you and me? What can we learn from that? And is there anything that we can learn? And then, so the first point you need to remember is that it is a festival following a year's produce. A year's produce. Now, and we began this year back in the time of the Passover. You had not yet reaped a crop. You were just planting the crop at that time. You were just sowing your seed. Or God was just becoming aware that you were putting your trust in Him and that He would bring you a spiritual crop and harvest. The second thing is that we are to go from the land and we are to rejoice before God, and we are to dwell in booths 7 days. And coming on down, he says, and you shall keep it a feast, verse 41, unto the Lord 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever. Now, the last I looked at my calendar, forever has not yet come, has it? Time is still going on. It's not finished yet. So I don't understand how anybody can think that, forever doesn't mean forever, right? Forever only means 40 years or 50 years. You know, I was thinking this morning as I was finishing this off. God says here, and I'll read it in a minute, that we are to remember the 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. Right? That God was with his people 40 years in the wilderness. You know, that's 20-some years ago for me. Those people were out there 40 years. And then they went into the promised land. I've been wandering in the... No, I don't like the word wandering. Okay, all right. You know, if you look in Bible encyclopedias and you look in the commentaries and things, it always talks about the wandering of the children of Israel. You know what? There was no such thing as wandering for the children of Israel. God knew exactly where they were going to go, and he knew precisely when they were to go and how they were to go, and there's nothing wandering about that, is there? Because wandering gives the impression that, well, they were just kind of aimlessly going here and there or wherever. God says, you will go when I lift the cloud or the pillar of fire, and you will stop when I tell you to stop. Now, that's not wandering, is it? Same way in our spiritual lives, we are not to be wandering through the wilderness. We are to be following God's direction, his leadership in our lives. And that's very important that we realize that God is the one in charge. Now, we sometimes may think that he's not in charge, or that he doesn't know what he's doing, or that he missed the turn here and led us like they did ancient Israel, that God missed the turn and took them right back against the Red Sea. And then the next point he brings out here as we get on down in it, you shall dwell in the booths, verse 42, 7 days, and all that are Israelites born shall dwell in booths. And then verse 43, why do we do it? Why are you and I living in temporary dwellings here in Jekyll Island? And he says very clearly, verse 43, that, or in other words, it is for this purpose, it is for this reason, this is why you are doing it, that your generations, whatever generation that might be, that generation, all of us together, may know that I made the children of Israel to dwell in booths when I brought them from out of the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God, and Moses declared unto the children of Israel the feast of the Lord. The purpose is that we look back. And we'll see in a little while, it also means that we look to the present and we look to the future of what booths mean and what they represent. But the reason he had for living in booths was that they don't forget. That's why I entitled the sermon, Booth It or Lose It. Okay? You're going to lose your contact with God. You're going to lose your spiritual journey, and you might start wandering in the wilderness if we do that, just like ancient Israel did. They lost where they were going. And I'll read some of that in a few minutes. And so we need to think about, why did God cause the children of Israel to dwell in booths? Because God wanted them to know and know that they know, to borrow a Rod Meredith's expression, all right, to know and know that you know that God is the one who provides. God is the one who brings forth the crop. That's why it's important to know that it's a harvest season. And that we take from that harvest and we go to a place where God has put his name. And we have calculated and done some thinking and meditation and thought into what are we going to take to that harvest festival? What are we going to take? Just money? That's not what God wants. And I'll show you in a few minutes what he wants. See, so in the very beginning, when he gives the instruction, he gives us a lot of things. I got five things. That is a harvest festival. You are to go to that place and rejoice. You are to dwell in booths. It's a statute forever. And the reason for it is that your generations may know that I made them dwell in booths when I brought them out of the land of Egypt. And that's the whole purpose. So let's go over to Nehemiah for a moment, in Nehemiah. And hear it when the children of Israel, because they forgot exactly what God told them not to forget, but when the children of Israel forgot why they were not living in booths, they went into captivity, and then following that captivity, they were coming back to the land in the book of Nehemiah, and they kept a festival of booths. A very interesting chapter, as we will find in Nehemiah. If I can find it. Okay, Nehemiah 8. And let's pick up the story in verse 13. It says, and on the second day, actually go back to verse 11. So the Levites still lulled the people, saying, hold your peace, for the day is holy, neither be you grieved. So here, as they had come back on this first day of Feast of Booths, the Levites calmed the people down, and they went up and they told the people that it was a holy time and they were not to be grieved. And all of the people went their way to eat and to drink and to send their portions and to make great mirth, because they had understood the words that were declared unto them. And then it says, on the second day were gathered together the chief of the fathers and of the people, the priests and the Levites, and to Ezra the scribe, even to understand the words of the law. And they found written in the law, which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths. They'd forgotten all this while they were in captivity. They'd forgotten what they were supposed to do. They had lost it, okay? And now that God was bringing them back, he was reminding them of some things. And so they found written in the law, which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths in the feast of the seventh month. It'd be an interesting... I'd like to have been there at that time when, after all of these years in captivity, they came back into the land and they found the book of the law and they began to read this book of the law, and it said, you're supposed to be dwelling in booths. And they immediately went out, it says, and that they should publish and proclaim in all their cities and in Jerusalem, saying, go forth unto the mount and fetch olive branches, and pine branches, and myrtle branches, and palm branches, and branches of thick trees, to make booths, as it is written. So the people went forth and brought them and made themselves booths, every one upon the roof of his house, and in their courts, and in the courts of the house of God, so wherever they could find some space. And in my research, most of these booths that they made varied in size a little bit. Most of them were no more than about 6 feet by 6 feet. It had to be big enough to put a small table in there, that they could sit at that table. I'm going to ask you a few questions a little later on. What were they doing when they were sitting, okay, at the table? What was supposed to be going through the minds? What was it, just having a good time, or what were they to glean from that? And so they got these different kind of branches, and they made these booths, as it is written. So the people went forth, and they brought them and made themselves booths, or sukkot. Sukkot, everyone upon the roof of his house, or in the court of the house of God, and in the street of the water gate, and in the street of the gate of Ephraim, and all of the congregation of them that were come again out of the captivity made booths, and sat under the booth. Now the word sat in Hebrew actually indicates a little more than just sitting. It means to dwell in, or to live there for temporarily. And so they sat under the booth. For since the days of Jeshua, the son of Nun, or Joshua, unto that day had not the children of Israel done so, and there was very great gladness. And it says also, day by day, from the first day to the last day, he read in the book of the law of God. And they kept the feast 7 days. It's amazing how they wanted to return to God and to learn of God. So again, why do we live in booths? Because it reminds us of the past. It reminds us of the past. Not just ancient Israel, but our life, your life, my life. Our time that we have spent with God, our spiritual growth, it reminds us where we came from and who we are and what God is. What God is. So it reminds us of the past. There's an old saying, if you forget the past, you're probably going to repeat it, right? You're doomed to repeat it. Unfortunately, it's easy to forget the past. We don't like to think about the past. We don't necessarily like to think about what God has allowed in our lives or the troubles that we have had or anything else. So God dwelt with man in booths. Remember the story. I'm not going back there, but you can go back and read the story when they came out of the land of Egypt, that they all lived in tents. And guess what? God also lived in a tent with them, didn't he? He also lived there with them. He sukkot with God, or with man. And man boothed with God. They had this close, intimate relationship, a close proximity, where they were all together living in temporary dwellings. So God dwelt with man in booths. The second thing is that God was the source of everything for Israel. And that's what the key point is, that God provided everything for these people. He was their shade. It's interesting, if you read about making this little frail sukkot, that they had, at least by Jewish tradition, that they had certain requirements that they had to do, that the materials had to be from living sources, not dead sources like plastic, but from living sources that had been cut off. And when they put the roof on, or the temporary dwelling, it had to be close enough to protect them, but far enough apart that they could see God and see the skies and see what God had created as they sat in this booth. They were to observe and see God, because it represented that God not only gave them shade or protection, but he also was their life and their light, right? He was their light. And he went with them. And so, as they made this little thing, they were to see that God was there. Another interesting thing about this Sukkot, that it was not tied together. Okay? It was not nailed together. It was, to a large degree, subject to whatever kind of weather was going on. And so God was the one that was, the one they knew was bringing whatever he wanted to bring into their lives, and it had to withstand all kinds of storms and all kinds of other troubles, because a booth is a testament, a testimony. It is a document of the miracles of God. The miracles of God. We'll go back to Deuteronomy. One of the most interesting chapters in the book of the Old Testament was following their time in the wilderness, that we find this song of Moses. And he gives a lot of interesting comments and things about what they were to have done and how they should have done it. But in Deuteronomy 32, I want to pick it up in verse 1. He says, "Give ear, O you heavens." Or actually, back in verse 30 of the previous chapter, it says, "And Moses spoke in the ears of all of the congregation of Israel the words of this song until they were ended." And basically, this song is a historical rendition of ancient Israel and what went on and what was happening. And he says in verse 1, "And give ear, O you heavens, and I will speak, and hear, O earth, and the words of my mouth. My doctrine shall drop as the rain, and my speech shall distill as the dew, and the small rain upon the tender herb, and as the showers upon the grass. Because I will publish the name of the Lord." Other translations say, "I will teach of the name of the Lord," that there's instruction along with it. Verse 4 says, "He is the rock. His work is perfect, for all his ways are just judgment. A God of truth and without iniquity, just and right is he." Coming down to verse 10, it says, "And he found him," that is Israel, "in a desert land, and in the waste, howling wilderness, and he led him about." See, it wasn't wandering, was it? God led him about. He instructed him. He kept him as the apple of his eye. He put his protection over them. He gave them shade. He did all these things. In verse 11, "And as an eagle stirs up her nest and flutters over her young, and spreads abroad her wings, taking them and bearing them on her wings, so the Lord alone did lead him, and there was no strange God with him." See, what we need to get from this is that that is who God is to us. And it's easy to forget God in this day and age of our mansions. And no matter what you and I might live in, it's probably a mansion compared to what the vast majority of the humanity is living in, isn't it? That God has provided for us, he's cared for us and taken care of us, and he bears us upon his wings. But then problems came, and I want to pick it up again in verse 18, I think. in verse 18 or 15. And it says, but Jeshuan is another name for Israel. They waxed fat and they kicked. Now that's a pretty interesting analogy. We had a little farm in Tennessee before we came back into the full-time ministry, and we raised Black Angus cows. And the last time I looked, when a calf gets fat, it's ready to go to the market. Okay? That's the time you take them to their doom, isn't it? So when Israel got fat, it says, they had problems. So they waxed fat and they kicked. And I'll guarantee you, little calves can kick. And they can kick hard if you happen to get behind one of them. But they feel, as the old saying goes, they're feeling their oats. And you try to drive them somewhere, I'll guarantee you they want to go somewhere else. They don't like to be pushed. Know anybody else like that? They don't like to be forced. And neither do we. So he says that they waxed fat, they kicked, and you are waxing fat, God says. That was years ago that he said this. Okay. You have waxed fat, and you are grown thick. Now, you're not talking about our weight, okay? He's talking about spiritually. That we have become complacent, we have become satisfied with ourselves, that we have become self-sufficient. Our trust is no longer in God, it's in ourselves. We have become totally introverted, taking care of ourselves. And that's what he said about ancient Israel. And you are covered with fatness. And then he forsook God, which was made. When we began to come to that point, and that's why God says we should dwell in booths, to keep us from coming to this point. That's why God says every year that you go to a feast of tabernacles and dwell in booths, so that we, as it says, don't forsake God, which made us. That's why when they sat in that little booth, they could look up through the ceiling and they could see God, who was their everything, their protection, their warmth, their light, everything that they were. And he says, and they lightly esteemed the rock of his salvation. Do you think that's not happening in today's world? My daughter was watching a program on Discovery Channel not long ago, and they had these scientists on there. And this one scientist was talking about how much man now understands. And he made the statement, he says, we now know to the point we don't need God anymore. We know where life came from. We know how the heavens were created or made. We know what human life is. We have all this knowledge. We don't need God anymore. And if you need God, you're ignorant. That was on national television. But it kind of shows where we are as a people, doesn't it? That we think we're so smart. Kind of remind you of what it says here, lightly esteeming the rock of their salvation. And they provoked him to jealousy with their strange gods, and with their abominations they provoked they him to anger. And they sacrificed to devils, not to God, to gods whom they did not know. And of the rock, verse 18, of the rock that begot them, you are unmindful. You know why you and I are here boothing with God? Is that we don't lose sight, but that we remain mindful of the God who called us, the God who has led us. And He is still leading us in the wilderness. Ancient Israel came up out of Egypt. Jesus Christ came up out of Egypt, and so are we coming up out of Egypt. So what does that booth say to us? That little booth is a testimony to our confidence in God. It is a testimony to the God who is our hope. It is a testimony to the God who is our strength, who is our faith, and He is our salvation. Everything. Everything. And every time we go home and go into that temporary dwelling, I hope we sit there for a moment as God instructs, and we recollect, and we think back, and we think about what God has done. That we think of where we are and where we have been and what He is doing in our lives. It is a testimony to the fact that we are nothing without God. That frail little Sukkot or Sukkah should sober us. It should sober us about life and about the frailness of life. So each fall, as we live for 7 days in those little booths, what should be coming to our mind? Well, that little booth should humble us from any potential arrogance, of any arrogance toward God. It should put us in our right position of the fact that we are nothing without God. We are nothing. Ecclesiastes 1 says, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, right? Human life is a fleeting thing. So what else should we learn? Let's go back to the book of 1 Peter for a moment. In the book of 1 Peter. And chapter 2, in verse 11. Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul, having your conduct honest among Gentiles, that whereas they speak against you as evildoers, they may, by your good works, which they shall behold, glorify God in the day of visitation. That they see this journey that we are taking. Peter says we are strangers and pilgrims. We are still walking through the wilderness with God boothing with us. But He is leading us. And hopefully we are not wandering, but we are being led by God where He wants us to go. Back in Hebrews chapter 8, in Hebrews the 8th chapter, chapter 11, verse 8, have the example of Abraham. This is another reason why we stay in booths. It says, by faith Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should have received for an inheritance, he obeyed and he went, not knowing where he was going. He didn't know for sure. But by faith, he sojourned in the land of promise. He wasn't wandering in the desert. God was leading him in the desert, okay? And in the dry places. We are to be like Abraham. By faith he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange land or country, dwelling in tabernacles or booths with Isaac and Jacob. Now, I don't know exactly what kind of homes that Abraham and Sarai and the others came from in the land of Babylon. But from all of the archaeology that they're digging up, they probably lived in some pretty nice places. From what the evidence is, they had some pretty nice homes. He didn't leave living in a tent to go and live in another tent. He left a way of life that was pretty sophisticated because God told him to come out of that and wander, or not wander, but to go in a certain direction. And so he followed God's instruction and he lived in tents. Now, I enjoy going camping, but after about 2 days, I'm ready to go home. Okay. After 2 days of camping, it's not fun any longer. Abraham couldn't go home. He was living in tents for quite a long while, wasn't he? And so we should. But the reason he could do that, he says, for he looked for a city which had its foundations and whose builder and maker is God. He could see beyond the tent flap, you know. He could look up through that Sukkot and see God. Why do you think he talked about the starry heavens so often? Because he saw God in those starry heavens. And he saw God who was in control of his life. For he looked for a city. He was walking. You know, going from place to place, wherever God led him. But there was always in his mind, there's something beyond this. There's something beyond what I'm doing right now. There's something permanent. Something permanent beyond all these tents and this boothing that is totally permanent because it's with God. It's eternal, and its foundation and maker is God. When we see our booths, no matter how great and how good they are now, I hope we can see them as temporary, because it's only if we see them as temporary booths that we begin to understand our relationship to God. Our relationship to God. And the more we become like ancient Israel and we become like Jeshuan, waxen fat and self-satisfied, no longer trusting in God, having faith in God, that we begin to lose sight because we're not looking through that roof of the Sukkot and seeing God. I dare say down through the years of the Church of God that a lot of us have at times not been able to see through those areas. And one of the requirements was that at least 50% of the ceiling had to be closed and the other 50% had to be open so you could see through it. Not all one side, by the way. 50% over here and this side, but you had to have opening spaces because we have to be able to see God as something permanent beyond where we are today. So we have to realize life is a vapor. That's why we live in temporary booths, temporary lives. That's why we live in this temporary body today. In 2 Corinthians chapter 5, Paul makes it very clear that we live in a temporary body. Just quickly going back to 2 Corinthians, which is also like a Sukkot, a temporary body, which we're going to kick goodbye one day, right? And get rid of. because there's something more permanent on the horizon that Abraham looked forward to and we look forward to in verse 1 of 2 Corinthians chapter 5. For we know that if our earthly house of this tabernacle were dissolved, we have a building of God. Now he's getting down to brass tacks. He's saying, hey, if we die and this earthly tabernacle is taken from us and we wind up going into the grave, there's a building of God that is still waiting there, a house not made with hands that's eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan, earnestly desiring to be clothed upon with our new house. As Paul says back in the book of Romans, we groan, don't we, sometimes? You know, unfortunately, we have a lot of sick people in the world today, don't we? We even have a lot of sick people in the church. You ever notice how many prayer requests we wind up getting from around the various churches? We have a lot of sick people. I bet you one thing, that they groan in this fleshly body that we have, waiting for their permanent home, when there won't be any pain, there won't be any sadness, there won't be any aches every time you move your foot or your leg. There won't be all of those things that are subject to us because we are human, we are physical. And so he goes on here, he says, for we know that in this tabernacle we do groan, being burdened, and not for that we would be unclothed. We're not wishing for death, right? But that we are going to be clothed upon, that mortality might be swallowed up of life. Every time we go to the Feast of Tabernacles, we are contemplating, meditating upon what is life. What is life all about? Where are we going? That's the whole purpose of it. The Sukkot also should help us to look to the future. I want to go back just to a couple of verses in Ezekiel 37. Ezekiel 37. Because there's something on beyond where we are today. And he says in verse 26 of Ezekiel 37, moreover, I will make a covenant of peace with them, and it shall be an everlasting covenant with them, and I will place them and multiply them, and I will set my sanctuary, his house, among them, in the midst of them forever. And my tabernacle also shall be with them, and yes, I will be their God, and they shall be my people. And the heathen shall know that I, the Lord, do sanctify Israel, and when my sanctuary shall be in the midst of them forevermore. We're looking forward to that time when God's sanctuary, not the temporary dwelling that he had with the children of Israel, but the sanctuary of God that will be with man. With man. Revelation 21 talks about that. But I'm going to go back to the book of Psalm for a moment. Just to consider one of the things that would be happening at that time when God is going to be with us. He says in Psalm 85, and I'm going to just read verses 10 to 12. Can you imagine this time, beginning of verse 9 actually, surely his salvation is nigh them that fear him, that glory may dwell in our land. Mercy and truth are met together. Can you imagine that kind of a time? Today it seems to be that if you have mercy, you can't have truth, right? And if you have truth, you're not merciful. For some reason or the other. God says in the future time, there's coming a time when the perfect balance is there between mercy and truth. The Amplified Version actually says that they have embraced each other. Mercy and truth have embraced. Righteousness and peace have kissed each other. Today we think that, you know, either it's peace at all costs or you're out for war, right? We don't know where the balance really is of righteousness and peace. God says there's coming a time that righteousness and peace will kiss each other. Truth shall spring out of the earth, and righteousness shall look down from the heaven. Yes, the Lord shall give that which is good, and our land shall yield her increase. Righteousness shall go before him and shall set us in the way of his steps. What a fantastic future that will be. What a fantastic future. Just like to make a couple of more comments then about this fall harvest. I challenge each of us to make a list, to contemplate and think about what has your harvest been this last year. By the rain in due season that God has given to you spiritually and given to me, have I taken the time to even be aware of what things I should be taking to this Feast of Booths, you know, the offerings, the fruit of the land? But talking about that spiritually, what should you have brought, and what should I have brought to this Feast of Booths? What has God blessed me with? What has he yield, or what has the yield been in what he has done in my life? And if I can't make some specific recollections of what God has done, I probably am not really doing what he requires me to do. And making some calculations as we come to this harvest festival, a spiritual harvest festival, that we should be now enjoying the fruits of that spiritual land, right? That's why we're here. That's why we can rejoice. That's why we can have great mirth, as it says in the book of Nehemiah. Because we are now enjoying the fruit that God has given to us. I can look at the church as a whole this last year, and I think there have been some specific fruits that have been born, right? I think one of the things, as Mr. McNeely was saying when he was here, that the gift of the Kingdom of God seminars. It was a gift, wasn't it, this year? But what has God gifted you with? And what have we brought? What are the spiritual sacrifices and offerings that we bring to God? What are those? Other places in the Bible talks about humility. Talks about thanksgiving. Talks about rejoicing. Talks about praise. We should have come here to offer God praise, thanksgiving, and prayer. So let's think about it. Are we neglecting the whole meaning of living in booths because we don't live in little Sukkot? Are we forgetting the picture? Because it pictures our relationship with God, past, present, and future. This Feast of Tabernacles pictures the glorious epoch in humanity's history on earth. It will be a time of unspeakable joy and triumph, of good over evil, righteousness over wickedness, and the children of light over the children of darkness, love over hate, and truth over the lives of Satan. So either we booth it or we lose it. Which is it going to be?